open this up by saying that those who know me may have gotten the impression that I was not really happy with how this last session went. And let me just say that this is far from the truth. I guess anger and frustration is much better description for my feelings. I'd like to share this with you, not to complain, but just to get us all focused on why we met here today and why we're going to meet tomorrow. We had two public comment periods. We had work results that we got huge support on in the first public comment period. We had consensus from the community in many, many areas. And what we saw this morning is that individuals, primarily those that were not in the CCWG discussions from the beginning, were bringing arguments that have been discussed in the CCWG months and months ago. That is not to scare you off making arguments, right? So please do contribute to this discussion. But what I think we need to avoid is reopening discussions on issues that have been agreed upon not only by this group, but with input from the wider community after a thoughtful analysis of all the public comments we received. And just because people didn't get their way, we didn't have full consensus on many items, but we had rough consensus. For those that didn't get their way first time round, now to try to get certain things reopened, I think will not help us. Also, it will not help us to rediscuss CWG dependencies. If we try to discuss CWG requirements, that is okay, but let's all be very clear, we're not going to make it if we do that. At this point, we can't afford to go back to CWG and ICG to rediscuss what they said we need to deliver on. We can't afford to go back to them and say, well, let's redo this approval by the chartering organizations for the CWG approval. It will derail the whole process. And this is why we try to encourage everyone to speak on substance, to take what we presented to the community and take community feedback in order to improve what we had. And what we heard is a lot of anxieties, fears, uncertainty, and that doesn't really help us put on paper how we need to improve the processes, the escalation paths that we described. So let me give an example. You know, I've given this some thought over lunch. When we discuss dismissal of board members or recall of the entire board, there was a lot of talk about, you know, who are these guys in the community throwing people out without any cause. What we didn't really hear is what we need to do in order to take away that concern. So let me make a concrete suggestion. What about this? If an SO or AC plans to remove their director, let them make a public statement about this, provide a rationale, not based on a catalog of causes, but they need to explain why they were unhappy with that person. Let's bring that to the community forum. Let's give that person the opportunity to respond publicly to the allegations. And then there can be a discussion. And if this process is not followed, we can open the IRP to the aggrieved board member and have tested whether a process was followed in the dismissal process. You know, so you would have an additional accountability because the community can't just secretly get rid of someone without explaining things. Then it must be a rationale, it must be documented, there's a right of defense. So we can easily tweak the process to accommodate that. Would that shed some light on the issue for some that had concerns on this? So I see George is nodding. I saw Tijani nodding a little bit earlier. Alan is frowning, which... No, Alan, fire away.
Sorry, I haven't figured out how to get back in Adobe yet. Isn't what you describe what's in our proposal?
But we need to make it more explicit then. I think the right of defense is maybe not clear enough in there. That the director concerned must have the ability to say publicly this was not true or, you know.
I think that's already there also.
Let's bring it up.
You went on to say they would be able to appeal it essentially. And if the ALAC were to say, we want to remove our board member because we are simply on a regular basis have disagreements in philosophy and how we look at things, that has to be a valid reason. It doesn't have to be justifiable, you know, simply a different mindset, and it's not something you can prove in court. And as long as it's within those rules, I'm happy. And I think that's already in the document we have.
We need to emphasize and institutionalize that if need be. And on your point, it wouldn't be the board member, the aggrieved board member, couldn't use the IRP to challenge your decision. But if, let's say, the ALEC was not using the public forum to have this discussion out there, and if it doesn't provide a rationale, then the IRP could say that the process was violated. And I think that's something that we, you know, could help the SOAC accountability on this community power. So I had Cavus and Fiona and Tijani.
Dear Thomas, we all have full trust on you, on your kindness, competence, neutrality, and so on and so forth. You said many things, but you did not mention that we have received 81 pages, although it is cut and paste from our proposal, from ICANN, and we have to consider that. If we don't consider that, and we ignore that, that proposal will go to the NTIA, and the NTIA will be faced two alternative proposals. One of them is based on experience of ICANN, 17 years of work, adjusting themselves to our requirements in the best possible way that they can. Other one is ours, is based on full theory, 100% theory. We put theory together one after the other. Skepticism from 1 to 100. So let us consider and to see where we can have a possibility to move toward each other. None of the two issues coming from the sky. We have to discuss them, and I think there is a room to have some sort of combination of both, have something which also satisfy ICANN with their 17 years of experience. So let us not take it in that way that you have mentioned. Let us work towards each other. We have coming to this meeting with the hope that we have an output of this meeting. If we stick to what we have, just reasoning that because of the two public comments, we will get nowhere. So let us have something constructive and objective. Thank you.
And I think I hope I didn't say anything to the effect of your fears. Certainly we have to look at ways to improve and reconcile the differences, but let's not move back to square one. So I see that Fiona and Tijani have put their hands up in the Adobe. Now it's difficult to find out the sequence, so I'm following the sequence in the Adobe, if you permit me to. Avery is next.
Thank you. Avery speaking. On this issue, when thinking about the sacking of the board, I don't like spilling. But anyway, one of the things that we've compared it to several times and several people have brought up is the notion of employment law. And I think that in the conversations we're starting to get close to, one of the fears that's been brought up to is it'll be arbitrary. It'll be just because of one vote they took that displeased people, and that would be enough to start the action. And I can understand a certain amount of insecurity about that. Now, when there was a conversation there, though the word was not used, I know that when I was a manager that had to deal with the notion of sacking somebody, I had to be able to show a history and a pattern. And so it wasn't just a reason, in other words, but there was basically a, for example, when Alan was saying, he says, we have a long history of not being able to agree, that the positions are always counter to our positions, et cetera, that there's a pattern, that there's been conversations. So maybe if we're looking for an intermediate point between there being a list of approved firing offenses and there being just, hey, we don't like them anymore, that basically people have to show a reason that is based upon a pattern or something like that. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. Next in line is Chris.
Thank you, Thomas. So I agree with you. I think it's clear that in principle terms there is consensus from the CCWG and the community in general, the comments that come in respect to the mechanisms for removing board members. I think part of the problem is that the detail depends to some extent on how you do it. So if I understand it correctly, the current proposal, which I think has had some pushback, is that it's not the actual SO or AC's right to do it. They have to go to the rest of the community and get agreement from them under a certain threshold. Is that correct or is that not correct? Because there's a thing in the comments about going to the community forum. Is that just purely so that they get a chance, that the director gets a chance to stand up and speak? Right. So in effect, then, the situation is that each SO and AC can, of their own, recall a board member. Fine. So the next question then becomes, all right, and that's on the basis of what? A simple majority? Does the GNSO split its right in two so that the contracting party's house has the right to remove its director and the non-contracting party's house has the right to remove its director? Those things are all important in looking at... I've got no problem with the principle, but my problem is, when do we get to the discussion about how it's going to happen? Are you going to allow for different thresholds for different SOs and ACs? So do you understand what I'm saying? I want to be clear that we're clear, because I'm not sure that we are. And just to finish on the cause thing, I think I don't agree with Alan in the sense that you could simply say we don't get on. I'm not suggesting there needs to be a list and it's got to be, you know, here's proof, etc. But I am suggesting, as you said, I think, Thomas, that there needs to be a clear explanation of what is the cause of it, because if there isn't, how can the director use the community forum or any other mechanism for that matter to, quote, defend themselves, unquote?
Thanks, Chris. And I think that a familiar face wants to answer that. Mathieu, are you with us?
Can you hear me, Thomas?
Can you hear me, Thomas?
Yes, we can hear you. Welcome.
Okay, I have a lot of echo, but that's okay. Hello, everyone. This is Mathieu Vey speaking. I'm glad I can hear you, and it's good to have such a fruitful dialogue going on. Chris, I think most of the questions you've asked find their answer in the current CCWG report. The process is giving the director a right to respond, and as a consequence, I think it was definitely the intention that the cause for, or at least the motive, were exposed. And I think I fully agree with one of the points that was raised by Chris, that we need to get into the level of details of how the various SO and ACs make their decisions. But to get to that level of details, I expect we would need first to confirm that this is something that everyone is comfortable working with and that it's not going to be work wasted because we would take another route. But I would think it would be useful for our group to get to proposals on this, as long as we can confirm that it's because we are in agreement that the rest of the proposal is agreed on. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Mathieu. Avery, is that an old hand? Okay. Sean?
Yeah, this is Sean for the record. I think I've been posting my comments on the chat. I need to clarify something from Thomas in terms of the individual board removal and how it affects the community forum. You're saying, okay, a board, an SOIC initiates, I think we need to go through the flow so that we know what this looks like. An SOIC initiates the process to remove a board member that was appointed by the SOIC. Then at one point, the community forum is convened, and then perhaps the board member is also in the room to defend him or herself. If the community at that point feels that or determines that what the board has said as against what the respective SO or AC that initiated the process has said is not in the interest of the community. That is, if the community feels that the SO or AC is removing this board based on the interest of the particular SO or AC, does it mean that the SO or AC will still continue irrespective of the process? So what is the purpose of the community forum? Is it just for, this is what you want to do for your information, bye-bye. Thank you.
Thanks, Sean. It's a matter of transparency to prevent secret discussions and secret decisions from being made and to force the SOAC to provide a rationale for the removal. And I think that, that would be an excellent example of providing for more accountability of the respective communities, because if they have to justify their decision publicly and on record, they will likely not take such decisions lightly. Next in line is Fiona.
Just for the purpose of being clear, I think it is important that we recognize that a lot of the things that we have been raising, the proposal, we are the ones who've been drafting them. We understand them. I don't know how many of you have tried to go and present that proposal to someone who's never been to an ICANN meeting and is a key decision maker and wants to understand what is happening. Then you'll realize that there's a lot in the proposal, yes, but it is not clear. We need to make it simple and clear. When the issues we are talking about, removing the board or spilling the individual board members or spilling the entire board, yes, there may be consensus, but if the step-by-step guideline of how that will happen is not clear, for someone who's not been part of drafting, the document looks extremely complicated. I have done that with my Minister of ICT. I've attempted to do it to the ministers of ICT within the East African region. The question is, why is the document so complicated? What happens? The questions that are being raised now in terms of the process, those are things we had agreed would be in the annex of the document. If that process is not clear, if there are gaps, or the process is so complicated, there is a risk that a lot of people who should otherwise be with us on this document are not on the same footing. I'm not raising it because I'm trying to take people back, but I'm just asking that can we please relook at the proposal in view of all the comments we have received and see how we can simplify what we have put together so that it is clear for entities that don't sit in this space, that are not part of the ICANN process, that do not understand the different constituencies within ICANN, to understand that, yes, this is what it is moving forward, and you're welcome to be part of this. Thank you.
Thanks, Fiona. And just to be clear, during last week's call, we've discussed exactly that point, and the group was very clear that we need to work on substance first and then on messaging. So, you know, simplicity of argumentation, ideally simplicity of the process, is something that we aspire to do. But I think we need to get agreement on the general ideas first in order to be able to to message things so that everybody can easily understand. Tijani?
Thank you, Thomas. You said, Thomas, that some members of the group had a minority position about some subjects. And now they come and they try to raise it again, and this will not help. I understand, because you consider that we had a consensus about it. I want to remind you that this consensus was met among the very large group, which is against the charter. The charter says the consensus should be among the members of the group, who are 20-something. Suppose, for example, at large has a position that they are the only part that are defending. And if they want to have their position in the report, they can bring 100 people, since it is open, this group. And you will feel the traction to the other way, and you will put it in the report. I think this is capture. Thank you.
Thanks, Tijani. Nigel?
It's on now, I guess. Thank you. I think we need some more clarity about the differing roles of board members and how this is affected in the removal process. The representative function, where the board member is representing an SO, and the executive function, where they're running the corporation. Now, a board member is a volunteer. They might get paid expenses or an honorarium, but they're not employed in the sense of a staff member. I must admit I was quite worried when I started hearing about employment law. Legitimacy for a board in a non-profit derives from the members. Now, we have some difficulty in defining who the members are in the case of ICANN, as we've heard earlier. I don't believe there can be any objective cause for removal of a board member except a really simple one, that there's been a threshold number of the members that he or she represents have affirmatively requested that removal. I can't imagine if we have a long, long list of, you know, the board member looked at me funny, so he needs to be removed. No, it just doesn't work. And during the process, the community or the members should be required to put forward a reasoned motivation for why the removal is requested. It's self-evident, otherwise how would you get sufficient support for the proposition? Obviously, there has to be due process, natural justice. A board member potentially subject to recall must be given the opportunity to protest removal and to be heard by the members. But you can't delegate the decision-making to a third party such as a IRP. Otherwise, all that will happen is the affected board member will involve the corporation in a process that will run as long as .XXX or did, or as .Africa seems to be set to run. Please bear this in mind.
Thanks, Nigel. Just a point of clarification. The proposal was that the IRP can be invoked for questions of process. So if the SO or AC chooses to not use the community forum to provide a rationale, that can be tackled, not the decision as such. And this suggestion to use the IRP for that purpose was, by the way, also supported by Jana Scholte, who is one of our PG advisors. Alan Greenberg.
Thank you very much. As I think I've made it clear, I support the concept of an ACSO removing their own director. I can certainly live with it being a community decision if that's the way it goes. I have real worries about identifying causes, the director defending him or herself, the potential for ultimate libel or slander suits, the possibility of taking ICANN to court. I mean, yes, indeed, if someone is dismissed from a director position, this could impact the rest of their life, depending on what the reasons we say are. And I find it really problematic, and I suspect we would never, ever use it if we put enough if, buts, and ands in to make it so potentially dangerous for going through that process. So I really worry about that. And I look at the suggestions the board made, and you know they're listing things like committed fraud, didn't follow the recommendations of the MAM. Well, those are reasons for the board to dismiss someone themselves. That isn't a community dissatisfaction with them. I think if we need to have long laundry lists of justifications for why we're dismissing someone, we should equally justify why we're appointing them. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. And the queue is closed after Cherie. We need to move to the next topic then. Per?
Yes. I don't really... We can spend our time because there can be hundreds of reasons for removing someone. And it's not unlike a public limited company where there are different fractions, but there can be anything. But of course, reasons must be presented and due process has to... But I don't see the difference between this and a limited company, public limited company.
Thanks, Pa. Cavus?
Thank you. I think we are discussing many, many things at the same time. I come back to the individual board member removal. Once again, I reiterate that. It is many, many other areas. It is mentioned whenever we have board, they have collegial responsibility to perform. So their action should have the safety or safeguard of the public interest. I propose the following three times at the group, that in exercise of their duties, the member of the board shall not act in a way representing the entity they have elected them, nor the region, but put it the following way, as a custodian of international public trust. This is the collegial activities. Otherwise, they don't call them board. We said no individual members. Board means that together. Whenever Steve goes with a resolution and asks one of his colleagues to move in the motion, the resolution, he asks whether there is any difficulty problem. Why he asked that question? Because the collegial. So we want now with this proposal of CCWG breaking that collegial activities. How? Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. Shireen?
I 100% support what Cavus says. A board member has responsibility to act in the collective interest of all stakeholders, not the single interest of a single stakeholder. And therefore, we have to avoid the situation where the dismissal of a board member changes the behavior of that board member. What you're still proposing is that the organization that is putting that board member on board has the sole power to remove that board member. I believe, to me, that is wrong. That is capture. It should be a community decision. I'm happy with that organization putting the petition, but then the decision has to be a community decision. The second thing is, which is a problem I see, is that you are creating two classes of citizens. Is the treatment the same for NOMCOM members or not? So I would like to have that process of removing a board member to be a single process applying to all board members. All board members are equal citizens. They are the same class. There isn't distinction between different ones. Thank you.
Thanks, Shireen. Sebastian, you had raised your hand, but you were not in the Adobe, so please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I wanted to raise a different issue. I have the impression that we have to be very careful about what we want to do when we want to dismiss a board member. I am not sure that we want to turn our community forum into, it seems that it's a translation from my knowing in French, kangaroo court, the tribunal populaire in French. And I am not sure it's what we would like to go and where we would like to do. We need really to be very serious about what we want to do with a board member. We want to him or her to leave the board. Do we want him to be in front of 1,000 of people to say somebody will explain why he needs to leave the board, and he will try to explain why he doesn't want to leave the board. I really think that we are coming back to a period I would like not to leave again. Thank you.
Thanks very much. I think with that, we should end the discussion on this point. We will take on board what we've heard. We will come back with a suggestion for a way forward based on what we've heard now. So let's move to the community forum now. And Jordan and his team, they've worked on some issues or some areas that should be reflected in the concept of a community forum. So over to you.
Thanks, Thomas. Hello, beautiful people. Here we go again. This will be a different conversation to the last one, I hope. You got as part of your reading pack a kind of document that had some of the discussion that Working Party One has been having on the community forum. And I've plucked out of it a few key issues to focus the discussion on. But I think through all of the discussion that the CCWD has had in Paris and BA here, the idea of mutual accountability is really important. It's most difficult with the kangaroo court risk that was just done. I can imagine that in some cases, the idea of kind of appearing before a community group to defend your conduct might not be the most appealing thing to do. So, but with bylaws changes, with the budget power and so on, it's been agreed that having people around the table to discuss exercising these powers before they're used, before decisions are made, is really important as a matter of principle. And the feedback that came back in the public comments was, we need more detail. We need to understand more about what this forum is, how it would work. Another point that came back was the notion that one of the advisors floated about a public accountability forum. That hasn't been fleshed out by anyone, but maybe it could be something that's grafted onto this ICANN community forum. And so all we were hoping to get out of what might be a brief discussion here, it might not, is any further kind of concrete suggestions about areas that need to be formalized in respect of the forum. And if you just scroll down a bit on the screen to those key points there, we've taken the discussion, the imperative discussion as read. There's been some discussion about how much formalization of the output of that discussion should happen. So if the forum is having a debate about whether to veto a change to the bylaws in respect of some item, should the discussion be summarized in writing by a neutral rapporteur and then circulated around the SOSACs to discuss? There are arguments both ways on that. There was also a kind of the idea of this forum so far as drafted was that you'd have to try and get some guaranteed representation from each of the SOs and ACs and the staff and the board and so on, but that it would be open to broad observation and participation as well. Is that still something that people agree with? Specificities about the level of detail that's required. And something else that has come up in the last few days is the time frames in which this forum would operate. There are some, the default that's been provided in the community powers part of this report is a 15-day discussion phase, just over 2 weeks, that follows a 15-day petition phase. So usually if there's a debate or an argument that's happening that might lead to the powers being exercised, people will be grumbling about that, talking about that. At some point, the tension will get to the point where there's a petition. The 15-day window for the petition thing to happen, and once there is a petition, there's a 15-day discussion period. Now, for some ICANN stakeholders, saying anything in a 15-day period, even with when they know it's coming, is not a thing that can happen. Some governmental representatives have suggested that that's just a totally unrealistic time frame, and that you need a much longer time frame. I don't know, 90 days, something like that. If you have a 90-day discussion period before any of these powers are exercised compared to a 15-day one, you're obviously slowing down a whole bunch of processes and stuff. So there needs to be a bit of a conversation about timeliness here. But overall, we've detected support for the forum idea, but a desire for more clarity. These key points highlight some of the key issues, and the basic way, hopefully this is a harvesting of ideas session or a raising of other points that haven't been mentioned as key.
Thanks very much, Jordan. So those who have their hands raised from the previous session, please do take them down. Let's now hear views, suggestions for, you know, how we would like to shape the community forum. Chris, I think you're the first one.
Jordan, thank you, and I think there's been a fair bit of work going on here, which is good. Just a couple of thoughts and questions. This seems to me to be the intention of this is that it's not is the intention of this that it's consistent or is it ad hoc? My understanding is it's an issue driven process. And is it intended to make a clear mandate of what the issues are that can come to the community forum, or is it intended that an SO, assuming it's a single SO or AC that can bring something, can decide to bring something even if it doesn't fit within the issues?
Good questions, Chris. Thanks. The idea is that it would be a, well, this is the detail we need to flesh out. The idea that I've had in mind is that it's a known body of people that it wouldn't meet unless a procedure was happening that required it to. So it wouldn't be the kind of group that would have a monthly meeting and there'd be a call for agenda items, and if people wanted to have a whinge about something, they'd just put it on the agenda. That's not what I have been contemplating anyhow. Does that deal with both questions there?
Yeah, it does. But that leads to a supplementary question, which is in the sense of, this question applies whether it's a standing body or an ad hoc body. Are you intending that the process for appointing people to this body would be a mandated process, or are you intending that it would be a process up to each SO and AC to figure out for themselves? And given that it's only a discussion body, as I understand it, it's not going to vote or anything, are you going to be... I suppose what I'm saying is, if it's merely a discussion body, then is it not possible to simply have a process whereby the community has it at an ICANN meeting or something? Is there a reason why it has to be an actual body? I'm not against it. I'm just not clear.
Yeah, the reason for that is that if it's a thing that has to be done in the exercise of any of the community powers, no one has suggested so far that these powers should only be exercised in a time frame that lets the discussion happen at an ICANN meeting.
Right.
So that's why it needs to be able to come together in between.
So I'm fine, but I just want to flag then for that reason that there would need to be discussions on funding mechanisms and on the way that, unless you're telling me that it's only going to meet virtually, you need to be clear about funding mechanisms. You need to be clear about representation, how many people. You know, ICANN might be comfortable funding a meeting if it's, you know, a total of 12 people. It may not be quite so comfortable if it's a total of 60 people. We need to be clear about that sort of thing. And then the other point, of course, is if it's going to meet face-to-face, then that presumably means there'd be the right for an audience, because you're not suggesting they're going to be meeting in a closed room. And so... things need to be fleshed out, I think.
Thanks, Chris. We have Cavus, Ray, Steve, and then Sam.
Yes. I think with respect to the forum, perhaps it may be a little bit of misunderstanding among colleagues. The forum, which first was called ICANN Community Assembly, but because of the connotations of the assembly changed to the forum, is really a floor of discussions and nothing else. Does not make any decision, but provides the rooms to further discuss the issue before going to decision-making, which is the third step. As we know that we have three steps, petitions, forum, and decision. So that was a good, and I have not seen any opposition of the board with respect to the forum in an explicit manner. However, in the method that they propose, MEM, there is no room in how this forum will be implemented. Because of the MEM issue group before going to the decision, which is a standing panel, whether in that MEM issue group there is a room for discussions, whether you call them forum or not. But the issue is to have the possibility that the people discuss the issue to analyze everything before going to decision. And I request the board member to clarify whether in that MEM there is such a room of discussions, whether in the name of forum or any other name, providing possibility for all SO and AC to further analyze the situation before going to the decision making. Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. Ray?
Thank you. Ray Polzak, for the record. So understanding you correctly, Jordan, you're saying a standing panel, but is only called when necessary. So I would agree to that. I would also agree to the fact that each SOAC can choose members by their own means of choosing. I also would call the question, is there going to be some consideration for people selected at large, not from the at large, but at large, by some sort of a NOMCOM or something? Would there be terms? Would there be term limits? Those kinds of things are very, very important. Otherwise, you have a little small select body that lasts forever. Also, the discussion before community powers are exercised, is that means that this group functions much like a grand jury in that it returns indictments? Or is it more to the point of, hey, whoever's in charge of this whole thing, you need to take a look at this? There's a distinct difference between those two options. So I would like to have those things brought to the fore and discussed, and maybe not necessarily taking the time today to do it, but I think they are very important considerations.
Thanks, Ray. And just to be clear, because there's a longer and longer queue forming, we allocated 15 minutes to this just to get some guidance as to how we should further flesh this out. You know,
so, and that's why I said don't discuss it now.
Yeah. So, and I'm really going to close the queue after Mark, and try to be as concise as possible. Steve.
Thank you, Steve DelBianco, CSG. Work Party 1, a subgroup, was convened by Jordan over the past couple of weeks to flesh this out, and I don't think calling it a body does it justice, and it may lead folks like Ray to conclude lots of potential mischief that the body could do. It's an event driven by the most noble of sentiments to the requirement that before we vote on something, we being the ACs and SOs or the MEM issue group, this works in both cases, before we would vote on something or an MEM issue group drafts a resolution for each of the ACs and SOs to consider, there would want to be a conversation with consultation, legal advice, clarity, and consistency. You have to have that, or each of the underlying ACs and SOs could be considering a resolution or voting on a power with completely different understanding of what it means and what it can accomplish. So you're right, Chris. There is a need for some staff support. There is some need for some legal help, just like the law firms that have helped the CCWG. But it really is no different than a cross-community working group that's come together to decide whether to exercise a budget veto or come together as to whether to exercise a spilling of the board, or come together as to whether to invoke a community IRP. And I'm seeing grimaces from Jordan, but the community forum, in the impression that a lot of us had on that call, was an opportunity to force us to be consistent and clear before we took the steps of launching an effort on a community power like blocking a bylaw, spilling the board, or an IRP. And in that regard, there is no notion to worrying about term limits or grand juries, because it simply comes together, either virtually or in person, to exercise the powers the bylaws have given to the community. Thank you.
Very briefly.
Just really briefly, I was grimacing because of this. It sounded like you were giving it more power than it had. So, yes, it's a discussion forum to make sure that the community understands each other's perspectives about exercising one of these powers before decisions are made. So there's no voting. The only reason you'd appoint people to it is to make sure that your SO or AC's perspective was shared, and to make sure that you had a way to hear what other people's perspectives were. So that's what this is about. Not decision making, not voting, not being a grand jury, not being a sort of set of high priests or anything.
Thanks very much. And let's all remember that providing for transparency is also a facet of accountability. So you've been asking for SOAC accountability. We're offering something and it's sort of de-escalated to a implementation detail. And I think it's a very important aspect of what we're trying to achieve. Sam.
Thank you. This is Samantha Eisner for the record. So I just have two questions for clarification. First, the community forum, as I understand it, would fit if there's a petition, discussion, decision phase that's laid out. The community forum falls within the discussion phase. And then if we were to move with the sole member model, how does the discussion in the community forum, which could include groups that are not part of the member group, how do those interplay, and what are the obligations of those participating in the member to consider the opinions or inputs of those who are not part of the member in taking their decision? Is there any requirements on, you know, if it's an advisory role, you know, if the ASAC raises a specific security-related issue with the proposed action, or the GAC identifies a specific public policy-related issue, you know, is there some sort of requirement? How do those interplay? That's the part that I'm not understanding about the forum.
Thanks, Sam. I suggest we collect the other speaker's input, and then Jordan will attempt an answer. Greg?
Thanks, Greg Shatton, for the record. I think it's, you know, important that we go back and read 7.3. It seems like we're having a lot of these conversations without reference to the text. So it may not be surprising that we're going in circles quite a bit. You know, 7.3, you know, does not expressly say this will be a standing body. And that's an open point. It also says it will be open to the full diverse participation from the full diversity of the ICANN community. So it seems like this is not intended to be limited merely to members. There's also no particular statement that this is going to be a live in face-to-face meeting group as opposed to something that would exist remotely or virtually. So it seems like there are open points that are suddenly being presumed without being fully worked through. So I think that, for instance, if the community forum is only going to be convened every couple of years, may never be convened, the idea of having a pre-selected panel of people kind of sitting around like moles may not be the right approach. They should rather be, you know, picked at the time. And I think the you know, so there are a number of things here that I think are more open than they would appear to be if you read the text. And I don't think they've, you know, been worked through by the groups that, in fact, you know, included myself. So I apologize for that. But before this, so what's reflected is. It's very much a work in progress. It's really, if this were a cake, at best we'd have it in the mixing bowl. Maybe the ingredients are still even on the counter, but they are certainly not in the oven, much less even half-baked. Thank you.
So thanks for taking us to your kitchen for a moment. Jorge.
Thank you. Jorge Cancio, I'm GAC rep for Switzerland, for the record. I made some comments during this discussion in a working party one, and I think that the goals of the community forum are in a way described in what we have in the second report, which is, among other things, to allow for a discussion, a conversation, share information, and reach a better understanding and better informed decisions, and to reach well-considered conclusions. Those are the goals. And I think, and to be fair to the different parts of the community, that we need a process. So the process, I think, should have at least three aspects or layers. First, the mutual information phase, where we share information. We put the facts on the table from each other's perspective. Then we have a discussion phase, which is not throwing arguments at each other, but really with a subsequent possibility of interacting among all the SOs and ACs and open to participants and observers, anybody interested in the decision at stake. And then it would be good that this process is facilitated by a neutral party, by an independent objective party who makes a record, who even could write a kind of summary of what has been discussed, and that after all this discussion we strive for consensus in the interest of the multi-stakeholder model. And I think that would be the way to really operationalize the community forum. Thank you.
Thanks very much. George?
Thank you. 2 points. First of all, there's a lot of discussion about the board comments here and about the proposal. The board is one of about 80 or 90 respondents to the public comments, and it would be helpful if we could hear what other comments there were, if there were threads that seemed to be popular in terms of representation of ideas. And that goes for this topic as well as others. The second thing is, I want to refer to Fiona's previous comment. We're getting clarification here of a lot of things, and that's good. But at the same time, I can't help but feel that the complexity continues to increase. And it's complex enough. Fiona's commented on the lack of ability to have other people understand what's going on. In addition, we have a strong suggestion from NTIA saying keep things simple and understandable. And that goes back to why we're here. The impetus for this entire process was the transition. Let's not forget that. And complexity, as complexity increases, it does not help, I believe, the probability of the transition going through. Thank you.
Thanks, George. We have Bruce, Mark, and then Jordan will respond to the open questions.
Thank you, Thomas. This is Bruce Tonkin. I think the community forum is really, need to understand what our key criteria for it, and I think the key criteria would be, and I think you've got that right in your dot point three, is that whatever forum you have, you want to have broad participation. And you want it to be open, and you want the outcomes or the documentation of that to be transparent. A fairly obvious thing that meets that requirement is the three ICANN meetings a year that we have. So they're physical meetings, they're transcribed, you know, there's a lot of material and support for those meetings. So that is almost a no-brainer that an ICANN public meeting meets this requirement. I think the challenge is to work out how can we work efficiently between those meetings. I think as Jordan and others raised, if you did have an issue where you wanted to get the community together, how would you do it quickly? And I think you really just have to have a set of tools that are already in place to do that. So you have some sort of time box chat forum that can occur between meetings, and it's like there's a chat that runs for 1 week. It's moderated. As others have mentioned, it's got some structure to it, like we're talking about a particular topic. You frame the issue, and then you allow people to participate via online chat for a week, and then someone then writes up the responses to that. So I think your real challenge is how do you meet between an ICANN public meeting and make sure we choose a tool and we test that tool prior to ever having to use it in a stressful situation.
Thanks, Bruce. Mark?
Yes, thank you. Mark Carvel, UK rep on the GAC. Some of my points have been made earlier. I won't go over them. I just have two additional points, I think. First of all, this is going to be a process. It's not. We don't see this as a discussion forum. It's part of operationalizing the powers. And the advisory committees, as well as the SOs, will need to make recommendations so that logistically is an important factor, and I'm one of those GAC reps who've who've advocated a much longer period for this process successfully to work out. And the question I have is, well, what are the consequences if, for example, the GAC makes a recommendation to the forum on public interest grounds, which is at variance with recommendations from others participating in the forum? What are the consequences of that? If there is a neutral party overseeing this process, that's quite a challenge for that party. And is it possible, therefore, for the neutral party to say, put the brakes on everything, we don't go ahead with rolling out the vote for the power in such a situation? So that's a question. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Mark. And as I announced earlier, with your intervention, we're going to close the queue. There are open questions from SEM. So I'd like to ask Jordan to respond to those, as well as to take stock of what we heard. And then we will again recap on the results or the findings of our discussion later today when we close. But just for everyone to remember, the MEM issue group is also a place where things need to be discussed. So just, you know, let's not discuss which model is preferable, but in both concepts, there needs to be a place where things are being discussed in the public for everybody to follow. Jordan, over to you.
Not a lot, but to say that that's been a helpful discussion, which has surfaced quite a lot more suggestions about how we can develop some detail here, so thank you for that. Sam, on your question about how the forum interplays with the single member, one analogy that might help is the way that it doesn't always happen these days, I don't think, but used to. There was a public board meeting at the end of each ICANN meeting, and before that was the public forum. And inevitably, some of the issues that the board was going to decide on would have been topics in the public forum. There's a discussion. The decision makers are listening to that discussion. They're being informed by it. They're taking the perspectives into account. And then in the end, they go away and make the decision. So I don't think that there's any, I don't think we could build any objective, you must demonstrate that you've paid attention to all of the suggestions that were made in the discussion. I think that would kind of defeat the purpose of it. But that's how I see the kind of the discussion in this forum then being taken into account and informing the decisions across the community. Because what we're trying to avoid, because the decisions in the community mechanism of single member are made within each SO and AC, we're trying to avoid those decisions being made in vacuums, in silos, without people understanding each other's perspectives. So that's where this fits in the kind of CMSM picture. And I don't really have any other, I don't think there were any other particular open questions that I needed to address at this point. Well, in terms of taking stock, Thomas suggests, support for the idea of there being discussion as an important part of exercising these powers. A clear ongoing desire for more detail on the one hand, and the other hand, simplicity. The only thing I'd say to that is that when you're in the middle of legislating, it looks messy. When you're in the middle of making a sausage, it looks ugly. We do have to get simple, but we have to know what we're going to get simple about. And I think that's still what we're doing in a bit of this, especially this, which was relatively undeveloped. And so I think that there's enough fodder there now for WP1 to take this away and turn it into something much more concrete for you to look at.
Thanks very much, Jordan. Thanks, everyone, for your valuable contributions. And while we're asking Steve to come to our table, I'll hand over to Leon to chair the next session. And thank you very much, Jordan.
Thank you very much, everyone. So we've had also some comments on the AOC incorporation to bylaws. I think that Steve has gone through, if not all, many of the comments that have been received, and we would very much like to hear what you can tell us about this review, Steve.
Thank you, Leon. If staff could bring up the second draft proposal, this is section 9, which runs only from pages 72 to 82. And we started off by explaining
why ICANN's commitments under the affirmation should be brought into the ICANN bylaws. And that arose from Stress Test 14. Stress Test 14 said, let's clearly recognize that the affirmation could be canceled by either party with 120 days notice, and that the affirmation was a bilateral agreement between the U.S. government and ICANN. As such, it was a ripe target for those who wanted to reduce the U.S. from having any unique role in ICANN. So we undertook, and there has never been any dissent to this notion of bringing the affirmation of commitments into the bylaws. And so we did that and collected a number of comments in the first round. The Work Party 1 subgroup on affirmation of commitments incorporated those into our second draft proposal. And we made one important addition, which is the recommendation. It's paragraph 507, where we recommend that there be a mutual agreement process whereby the U.S. government and ICANN terminate the affirmation of commitments after all of the appropriate commitments have been brought into the bylaws. We would want to do that without disrupting any reviews that were already in process, obviously. But the idea is to take this last remaining bilateral, unique U.S. role and take it off the table. And that's the objective there. Let me turn to the public comments. There were 18 commenters that they show up on the public comment tool under the AOC tab that staff put together for us. But there were also several more related to the affirmation of commitments that showed up under the PC tool under fundamental bylaws. And let me explain why. The CCWG proposed diving into the affirmation of commitments, which has really nine sections to it, and pulling several of them, which are commitments by ICANN, and pulling them into the core values, the mission and core values of ICANN. The ones we proposed bringing in were paragraphs 3, 4, and 8 from the core values. But the IPC, the intellectual property constituency, noted that we have probably lost one of those commitments. It has to do with the AOC commitment number 7. And that was a commitment of ICANN to honor transparent and accountable budgeting processes, providing advance notice to facilitate stakeholder engagement and policy and decision making, et cetera. It's a commitment to a bottom-up process and transparency that may or may not be reflected in the core values and bylaws that we are currently proposing. So we'll take that on board from the IPC and be sure that that commitment made it into the bylaws as well. Now, there were several comments on affirmation of commitments, paragraph 8, item B. Let me just read that to you. It was, quote, ICANN affirms its commitments to remain a not-for-profit corporation headquartered in the USA with offices around the world to meet the needs of a global community. So that was in the affirmation, and it's a commitment that ICANN made. And in keeping with our spirit, we wanted to bring over commitments to the bylaws. Now, what we did in the CCWG was analyze that, and it's on page 36 of our second proposal. We analyzed it very carefully, devoted an entire page and several calls to it, to try to figure out whether 8B needed to become a fundamental bylaw or not. The conclusion the CCWG reached was that it did not need to be, and there were two reasons. The proposal we had suggested that a two-thirds vote of the community mechanism, a single member, would be needed to change ICANN's articles of incorporation. And a lot of you know that the articles already state that ICANN's a California nonprofit corporation. So there's one element of control that's almost identical to that which would be there if it were a fundamental bylaw. Second, Article 18 of ICANN's current bylaws states, quote, the principal office for the transaction of the business of ICANN shall be in the county of Los Angeles, state of California, quote. So given that it's already a bylaw and already in the Articles of Incorporation, the CCWG concluded it did not need to be moved into a fundamental. Now, there were three commenters in the public comment tool who noted that Article 18 should still be a fundamental bylaw, and there were three commenters who said that it should not. So we don't have a clear consensus either way on that, which means that the CCWG recommendation probably stands. Now, several folks have worried that we put too much emphasis when it comes to these affirmation of commitments reviews, too much emphasis on the ATRT. Because as I noted earlier, the affirmation has 3, 4, 7, and 8, which are commitments by ICANN, but paragraph 9 contains 4 significant reviews, what we usually call the AOC, the affirmation of commitments reviews. And several commenters, ALAC in particular, noted that the ATRT has got an awful lot on its plate, and it might be too much asking them to also recommend the Sunset Amendment or creation of new reviews and to amend reviews about which they know nothing, right? The ATRT might not know anything about the WHOIS review, so it might make more sense to look at amending reviews to come from the actual review teams themselves, and that's something we'd want to take on board. Now, the commitments of the reviews do go into the bylaws, and a few want those commitments to be mapped into the mission and core values. I'll work closely with Becky to see if there are any commitments that didn't make it over. But when we met in Paris, we explicitly decided as a group not to recommend that the commitment statements be pulled out of the four reviews and dumped directly into fundamental or core values. We said that it would be too much to change, it would be too much of a standard to have to require fundamental bylaw type approval if we simply wanted to honor the request of the Security and Stability Resiliency Review Team to change the way the reviews run. So that was done for expediency purposes, but we'll do a detailed comparison of that. I did want to mention that the board itself did not support one of the recommendations, which was in the review team on consumer trust, competition, and consumer choice. We had said that that review team's recommendation should be implemented before the next round of new GTLDs were open. And the board explicitly felt that that was not a good recommendation, suggesting it could be a barrier to entry for those who might want to get a new TLD, and that's on page 80. There was no one else who made the same comment that the board did, but because we're meeting with the board, I just thought it was appropriate to call that out. The intellectual property constituency said that this was predictable, that members of the CSG, the non-contract party house, would be concerned that limiting the number of people on a review team to just three members for any given AC and SO, that would mean that many constituencies in the GNSO are not going to be members of a review team. They could be among the participants that are in the room. They can weigh in. But putting a limit of three would, in fact, mean that some constituencies won't be present. We knew that when the CCWG made the recommendation. I'm simply noting for you that IPC and some others have commented on that. Now, the board makes some really good points about standardizing the review process. In other words, aspiring to say, let's standardize the administrivia around review without getting into the specifics at that point. I don't think it's necessary that the specifics be laid out, but I think it's a great plan for ICANN staff and management to try to come up with ways to make these reviews run better. Let me next turn to the WHOIS Directory Services Review. All of you know that that's the fourth of the four AOC reviews. We've only done one so far, and there's another one teed up to begin very soon. And while it says in the affirmation of commitments that it's a WHOIS review, we had long ago said, well, let's make sure we call it a WHOIS/Directory Services Review, because who knows if WHOIS will still be around. It might be named something different. But that didn't go far enough in the views of Steve Crocker, other members of the board and staff who said, wait a minute, there's some things that the affirmation of commitments required in the WHOIS review that could be dangerous or destructive or, at the very least, are inappropriate to carry into the future. And that sort of teed something up, and I waited with bated breath for the board's new language on WHOIS, and I was incredibly relieved when Bruce Tonkin circulated it on September the 1st. It was very close to the current language, and I feel, and the BC at least, commented on this, we felt it was a completely appropriate improvement over the AOC language. And we put that in the BC's comments. I'll note that none of the other public commenters addressed the board's suggested language for WHOIS, and I think that's just because it came in late. It came in on September the 1st, and by that time, everyone else was working toward a September the 12th deadline. But we felt it was completely appropriate, other than the one line that Bruce had at the bottom of his email suggesting how you measure the five-year cycle time on the WHOIS review. The CCWG had carefully worked this out. Alan and Aubrey and I and many others talked about it, that the cycle time on the five-year window should be from the date the previous review was convened. And that was chosen on purpose to guarantee that a new review would be initiated at least every 5 years. The board's formulation could result in a review every 6 or 7 years, since the date of board action could be as much as 2 years after a review was convened. And so I'd welcome a chance, Bruce, to talk with you about that and see if you see our logic on that, and then we end up being completely consistent on the five-year cycle time. And let me close with a recap by saying that This morning we discussed a little bit about whether the ATRTs of the future should be able to handle stuff that goes in Workstream 2. Well, to the extent that a Workstream 2 item is a requirement of this transition, it may not work to just put it into the ATRT. I understand that, and we covered that this morning, because there would be no obligation for the board to implement every single recommendation that flowed out of an ATRT. So to the extent that some things need to be obligatory, you may need an interim bylaw. The recommendations that the CCWG made, they echo what Steve Crocker said this morning. We concluded that the board could not be obligated to implement each and every recommendation that flowed from each and every affirmation of commitments review team. Board's decision against implementation, however, would be subject to reconsideration and an IRP. Now, in the CWG stewardship co-chair's comments, this is the co-chair's comments on the second draft proposal, they confirm that the mechanism I just described, the challenge of the board's decision not to implement, that mechanism is adequate to assure the implementation of the IANA functional review recommendations. So from this point forward, the members of Work Party 1 and the sub-team, which includes myself, Avery Allen, and many others in the room, will hold calls to respond to these affirmation of commitments reviews comments to work towards what the real goal of today is to work towards our next draft report. So with that, Leon, I'll turn it back over to you to manage a queue if we have comments.
Thank you very much for this very detailed report and walk through the comments, Steve. And I see we have many hands in the Adobe Connect room, and I am not sure which are new hands or old hands, but I think that the queue begins with Chris Despain, if I'm not mistaken. And if I am, I apologize for skipping anyone, but we'll go to Chris.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve. That was very thorough. I just have one point I'd like to bring. I'm not sure. Well, let me try and see. I think there is a difference between what the affirmation of commitment says regarding jurisdiction and what the article says. And the key distinction is the word remain. In the AOC, it says ICANN will remain. And the articles don't say that. It says it is. So I'm just flagging it on the basis that I don't know if it's going to get picked up. I don't know if anybody's going to want to run with it, but it's there. And I think if we're not doing it, if we're not taking it in, then we need to have an answer for why we're not doing that and what the consequences of that may be, because that is a change, I think. Thanks.
Leon had given me leeway here to quickly respond, and all of page 36 on our second draft report speaks to that issue. We zone in on that, and you're right. The word remain, not only was it affirmation of a commitments 8B, but Fadi and others have said so in front of Congress. Of course, we're going to stay in it. Let's just put all that aside. It can't change without changing the articles of incorporation, because the articles of incorporation, while they say the word is in California, for it not to be there, for the headquarters not to be in California, forces a change to the articles. So CCWG, trying to keep things simple, suggested that they're equivalent, that the promise to remain that was in 8B is equivalent to the combination of Article 18 and the bylaws, which can be blocked by the community, and the Articles of Incorporation, which must be affirmatively approved by the community. And I believe the board is consistent with the notion of fundamental bylaws and the Articles of Incorporation being subject to community approval. So I hope that we don't get hung up on that word. I appreciate you pointing. I hope that won't be the hang-up. The comments that came in saying we ought to make it fundamental, they weren't hinging off of the word remain. They were just saying we want to do everything we can to be sure that this can't be changed easily.
Thank you very much, Steve. I just want to check with Cavus if that's a new hand or an old hand, Cavus. It's an old hand, okay. Well, then we'll go to Alan Greenberg.
Thank you. 2 points. The first one maybe is in the humor category or maybe not.
Okay, try to be funny, Alan.
I hope my timer's stopping. The whole concept of a California corporation incorporated in California with articles in California changing the bylaws to move somewhere else, the concept saying we're no longer headquartered in California, we're now a Swiss corporation in a California bylaws doesn't make a lot of sense. So the whole thing really is show and tell. If we're going to move jurisdictions, we're going to have to reincorporate somewhere else. So the whole thing is a little bit, I find, humorous, but people do consider it seriously. For the record, you mentioned that I was part of the group that talked about the five-year cycle. I was. I disagreed, however, with the current result. We have shown ourselves unable to complete these things in the cycle that we're talking about right now. The last Who Is review took a year and a half in itself. By the time it got reviewed and by the board, it left virtually no time to do implementations in the kind of cycle we're in right now. So I strongly supported the position that the internal staff group had taken at one point in saying the five-year cycle starts from the time the results are presented. But so be it.
Thank you very much, Alan. Do you want to do you have any reactions? Okay. So next in the queue, I have Greg Chapman.
Thanks. It's Greg Chapman for the record. I agree with Alan. If ICANN were to move to another jurisdiction, it would take a lot more than changing, one article in its articles of incorporation and a line in its bylaws. It would take a complete, change in domicile and structure. Redrafting of a whole bunch of stuff, so it's not easy. These are not transplantable objects. They really need to be recreated in a different place. I'm referring to corporations. It's certainly done, especially from one state to another in the U.S. And sometimes you switch over. And within the U.S., it might be easy enough to change from a California corporation to say a Delaware corporation. Although easy is the devil's in the details. But I think it does point out the issue that what we have that this is the point Chris raised, we only have a current statement of fact. We don't have a commitment not to change. The friction to change would be extremely high, as Alan points out, but we don't have a commitment. And somebody might run with this. I think it's virtually the only commitment stated in the AOC, maybe the only commitment stated in the AOC, that is not being transmitted as a commitment into the bylaws. So I wonder whether that will cause some heartache if someone picks that up as this. And I'm no Congress watcher. I'm not a lobbyist or anything like that. I wonder if it will get picked up. And someone will say, why out of all the commitments is this the only one you didn't put in? Curious.
Thanks, Greg. Steve?
Yeah, and the answer will be because it was opposed by a significant majority of governments in the first round of comments. And in the second round of comments, we had a 3-3, three in favor of making it fundamental on Article 18 and three against it. So since we are running a community process here, we are really trying to generate what is the community consensus, Greg. And as far as someone else picking it up, boy, we definitely have that risk, not just with this line, particularly because it came up at the hearing that Fadi did, but there are other places where it could come up as well. Ironically, this might be the one area where we have the strongest. It's not just the friction, but it, as explained on 36, there's a belts and suspenders on the U.S. location in terms of the Articles of Incorporation and Article 18 in the bylaws. So it's more than just friction. And yet you're right, you never know politically what will be the things that people could focus on.
Thanks, Steve. Next on the queue, I have Nigel Roberts.
I'll make this very quick. Just to follow on from what Greg said, it's perfectly possible to re-domicile a corporation across even to another country. My country has special legislation just to encourage that. But the practices here, I think that what we're looking at is the perception that we can somehow build in a reassurance to those people who want, as it currently says in the affirmation, the corporation to remain incorporated where it is. And I'm not sure that's actually quite possible, because the corporation always has the possibility to wind itself up. And if what we currently call ICANN now wants to move to Tuvalu or wherever, it could wind up the corporation and form a new one out there. I mean, the practicalities of that happening are almost incomprehensible. That's almost never going to happen. But I don't see how you can build in a kind of fundamental bylaw that says, in perpetuity, the corporation will always continue to exist, because that goes against perpetuities and so on. You just can't give that guarantee.
Thanks, Nigel. Steve?
I'm no lawyer, never written bylaw in my life, but if the word remain has special meaning versus the words we already have, like shall and is, we have the words shall and is all over the bylaws and the articles of incorporation. Those have the implication of continuing on in the future until they are changed. If the word remain is an essential addition to that, well, then we better put the word remain in front of every verb in the Articles of Incorporation and Bylaws, because we say over and over again that ICANN shall be a bottom-up multi-stakeholder corporation, so should it be shall remain? Right? It doesn't make sense to me to give special assurance to the word remain when our articles and bylaws already use words like shall and is, and they provide the friction, as Greg said, the friction that requires community approval in the case of the articles and community veto in the case of the bylaws. And that should be sufficient. And with all of the big problems we have in front of us, I certainly hope that trying to carry the word remain into the bylaws doesn't become a sticking point for us.
Thank you very much, Steve. Next on the queue, I have Alan Greenberg.
Thank you. Since if we actually did move, we probably would reincorporate somewhere else, and this corporation would remain in California. Maybe that's playing a trick with words. I guess if we think or we get the message that this is going to be a sticking point in Congress or wherever, then it doesn't cost us a lot to put it in. You know, I think this is it should be a very pragmatic decision, because I don't think it has any substance difference.
Thank you very much, Alan. Finally, the queue is closed with Caboose. Caboose?
Yes. What I wanted to say was said already by Steve, that whenever we have the term shall, it means it is mandatory, so sufficient to have that one. Now, the question whether you put it in the fundamental bylaw or in the standard bylaw, I think it was discussed, and it was felt that it may not be required to be in fundamental bylaw, because it's coming from the affirmation of commitment between the U.S. government and the ICANN. But if the community later on at the final stage decide that it will be fundamental bylaw, we can do that. For the time being, we leave it as it is. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Caboose. So, I see, we're ahead of scale, but I feel like this issue on the affirmation of commitments, from my point of view, has overall agreement, and I think this is something that we can feel positive about, and I see that there is no gap to bridge between us and, not us and the board, but between the community and the draft. So let's keep it that way forward. So thank you very much, Steve. And on our next agenda item, we will be addressing the appeals mechanism, and for that, I would love to have Becky here, but we don't have her, and she will be joining us remotely. So, Becky, are you still with us?
I am. Hello, everybody, and apologies for my inability to get to Los Angeles. My doctor said no pressurized cabins until I get on a plane to go to Dublin. So, I believe I sent one slide, and it looks like the staff is trying to figure out how to put it up. Okay. Just in terms of on the independent review and the request for reconsideration issues, I think that there was, as we have seen in the previous comment period, strong support pretty much across the board for an enhanced and independent review process. There were some themes that I think, substantive issues that were raised. Quite a number of people commenting said, you know, the details of this are very, very important. One, you know, what's the process for going forward? When is the working group, sitting down to start working out details and operational rules? What does that mean for timing and implementation of the fully enhanced IRP? We got some interesting and somewhat conflicting input on the scope of the IRP. Following the first draft of proposal, there was strong support for limiting the reach of the the scope of the independent review to determining whether or not an action by ICANN was or was not consistent with ICANN's governing documents, the Articles of Incorporation and the bylaws. Also as a vehicle for hearing and resolving issues raised by single members related to their rights to the rights of members under the California statute. The third area which we proposed allowing the independent review process to function was as a reconciler of conflicting decisions by expert panels. We had in this round a couple of comments saying that it should be constitutionalized and focusing on compliance with the articles and bylaws only. One commenter in particular suggested that in addition to this constitutional inquiry, the independent review should be permitted to look at whether a decision was fundamentally irrational as well. Now, the board did suggest that a fundamentally irrational standard might be something that was usefully applied in the request for review or the request for reconsideration context, not, I don't believe, in the independent review. The board in particular thought that conflicting decisions by expert panels should be resolved in a process that was the product of whatever process set up those expert panels. So, for example, if there was when there is a new round of new GTLDs, presumably there would be some expert panels, and presumably we would be smart enough now to know that we have to have a mechanism for reconciling conflicting decisions of those panels. So there are kind of three different takes on the scope. That are out there, although by and large I think that the support was for the scope that is in the second draft proposal. There were a couple of questions about funding, including whether the funding would, the obligation to fund the panel, including when it was sitting, would impose too great a burden on ICANN and make it not only being costly but also make it difficult for planning purposes. Some commenters who had made this comment at first continued to question the impact that ICANN funding would have on independence of the panel itself. And the board, in its comments, proposed that the cost, that there be a distinction in what burden of cost ICANN bore depending on whether the review mechanism was addressing a community-raised concern, so in the proposal, the a community IRP, or and that sort of in an ordinary commercial dispute where there was a materially harmed party, that the current allocation would be retained as it is now, which is generally split between the parties, but with the panel having the ability to award costs to one side or the other. We continued, some of the people who argued that the standard of review for the IRP should be abuse of discretion repeated that point. I did not read the board's comments to have that objection, but there were a couple of people who continued to advocate for an abuse of discretion standard. And I should just say, I'm going through these. All of these things are things that, you know, we discussed in great detail as we in the run-up to the second proposal. Commenters who in the first review period suggested that there should be a requirement to participate in a relevant PDP so that, you know, somebody who wanted to use this process could not game the system. Can you hear me better now?
Yes, we'll listen to you.
Okay. That people should not be able to sit on the sidelines and then and come up with new objections in the aftermath of a PDP. Now, that, again, was something that we had discussed at great length in the working group. And then finally, there continues to be some concern expressed by at least two governments that for some reason the IRP would not be usable by governments. I mean, it certainly would be usable by a government that was materially harmed or would be in the case of the interlocutory sort of action. And certainly, you know, in the single member model under consideration, the GAC could be part of the communities who brought it. So those are really the issues that I think are on the table, but I don't think that anything in the comment, and let me just say one more thing about the board's comments. As I read the board's comments, and the board, I'm sure, will be feel free to expand on those, they're sort of separating the community IRP from the other IRPs. It's not at all clear to me why you would have different panels to do that, and I think it would probably be inefficient to do that. But I the other sort of part of the comment that I took away from the board's comments was that you know, maybe with respect to a community IRP, there might need to be some additional process. I think that All of that goes back to what we acknowledged in the report, which was, you know, there is a need for sitting down and doing hard work to hammer out the details and rules of procedures to ensure that this process works, that it doesn't, can't be used in abusive ways to prevent progress within ICANN and is not subject to abuse or to is not so easy to use that it becomes a major stumbling block in getting anything done.
Thank you very much, Becky. This is Leon Sanchez. And I see we already have a hand up. Chris Despain.
Just a minute. Thank you very much. And thanks, Becky. I hope you're doing okay. I just wanted to respond, if I may, Leon, to the question about the boards, the splits with the IRP and the MEM.
Please do.
So I think there's nothing specifically in it. If one wanted to, one could bring them back. I think the key for us was simply that, A, we wanted to demonstrate that there were separate standards in the sense of costs and so on, and B, I think we wanted to draw a bright line that showed that there was a specific process for the community-based use of an arbitration rather than sort of the singular use of an arbitration. But as a fundamental principle, I don't think there's any problem if we go down this road with actually calling it the IRP, et cetera. You don't have to call it the MEM. But I think we, certainly for illustrative purposes, we were trying to show the difference. It may be that it's actually turned out to be more confusing, in which case I apologize for that. But it's not intended to be called that or anything like that. Thanks.
Leon, could I
very much
add?
Chris. Yes, Becky, please go ahead.
I want to add one more point that I think was important, and which was a point raised by several people about whether the IRP would be available in the event that, for example, there was a view that the single member, for example, was attempting to impose an outcome that was inconsistent with the bylaws obligations. And that view, that question, that is one thing that I don't think we did discuss in the run-up.
Thank you very much. Becky, do you want to add something, Chris? No? Okay. So next on the queue is Caboose.
Yes, I see in the ICANN suggestions or proposal, they mentioned that they want to a standard review, including rolling back to the standard of review to the standard that was in place pre-April 2013, and so on and so forth. In fact, this has some not inconsistent, but difference between the proposal of ICANN and the CCWG, and we would like to have some explanation, the reason for that, and also an emphasis on one action that board mentioned with declaring whether the board has acted consistently with the provision of the article and so on and so forth. That means 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 10 times. So why the word consistently is there? Why they should not say whether the board has acted in against the provisions of the article of incorporation? Why the term consistently is there? So, but first question, why we go to the pre-2013 April procedures and why the consistently is there? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Caboose. Next to the queue, I have Steve Del Bianco.
Thank you. And hi, Becky. You weren't part of this morning's discussion when Holly and Rosemary talked about the sort of interplay between the board's fiduciary duties to the corporation versus what a member could do to override those fiduciary duties. So I ask the question to you, because the BC is very keen to have these IRPs decisions be binding. And in your opinion, does it matter for a decision to be binding? Does it matter whether we are a membership organization and that a membership standing entity brought the IRP? Or can all that just be handled by the holdings and the agreement to abide by arbitration? Thank you.
So, Leon, should I respond? So,
yes,
obviously, please. I read the Fidley Adler memo very carefully, and this question was a question that I've raised. I have said consistently that the membership model allows shared responsibility for making decisions relevant to certain aspects that fall within the board's fiduciary obligations, for example, budget, strategic planning, and all of those kinds. But to me, that is not the community overriding the board's findings of its fiduciary obligations, but it gives affirmative authority to the community with respect to making decisions in those areas. I think that the membership model that therefore provides with respect to those statutory membership powers, the membership model certainly has fewer questions about enforceability, and I don't think I saw in, I mean, what I took away from the papers that I reviewed, both the ICANN board input and our attorney's input, is that there are at least questions. Having said that, I'm not an expert on California law, and I'm not going to propose to act as one, but I do think that at least that there are at least open questions on this point.
Thank you very much, Becky, and you raise a very important point, and I'd like to suggest we focus on these questions and we try to bridge the gap here. I am aware that there are a couple of details of that make a big difference. That there's small details that make a big difference between what we have been proposing as our draft document stands, and what we've been listening from other members of the ICANN community, including the board. So, what I would suggest is to focus into what extent we can accommodate or put the different pieces of the puzzle so we can fit both the needs or the concerns that we have identified as a group, but also address the comments that we have received from the wider community. So I think that this will be food for thought so we can continue our discussion and we can find a way forward into trying to actually deliver a viable solution that not only binds those subject to the IRP, but also I'm thinking of maybe broadening the scope. I remember that we had a proposal that stated that the IRP would be suitable for fundamental bylaws, and I think that one thing that we have heard is that we shouldn't be narrowing the scope into fundamental bylaws, but we should also be including regular bylaws and maybe articles of incorporation. So I think that's an area of opportunity that we have that I think it's very easy to breach the gap there. So, okay, my time is over. So I'll turn now to Thomas.
Yes, thank you very much. And before we move to the section on principles, you will have seen that I went out briefly with Larry. Larry has been with us the whole day. We've discussed earlier this morning where we would squeeze him in to say a few words, and now we find out that he has to leave in like 20 minutes' time. So we will hear from Larry now, and then we will continue with the Q and with the discussion on principles. Larry, why don't you come to, you know, don't be afraid, we won't bite.
Well, thank you, Thomas and Leon. Yeah, I've been trying to decide whether to come up and say anything or not, but the issue was forced by the fact that I'm leaving in 15 minutes, so if I was going to say something, it had to be now. First off, and I want to reemphasize what I put in the blog a couple of days ago, this is hard work. You folks are making history, and nobody should get discouraged or frustrated about things. I mean, if this were easy, it would have been done long ago by other people. But for whatever reason, this is the group that's come together to try to solve these issues. And I hope, and I can tell, every one of you takes this responsibility very, very seriously. And that's good, and that's important. But let me ask you this. You came together for 2 days, today and tomorrow. And I'm not quite sure what everybody's expectations were would get accomplished. But how many of you right now feel really great about all the progress you've made today? Raise your hand. Okay, but there's a lesson there, I think, for all of us. And by the way, when I put these blogs out with advice or thoughts, it's there for you to take or not. It's not a direction. In no way am I trying to drive you to a particular. The importance of making progress and trying to come to conclusion. And if the fact that nobody raised their hand would suggest that the discussions today, while important and every time people come together and talk, it's good, but are we really organized? Are we really progressing in a way that brings the group to bridging the gaps and reaching consensus? And if we're not, then maybe folks ought to reassess. What is it about the discussion today that is just letting people continue to churn around the issues but isn't getting us to resolution? Your chairs are doing a wonderful job, and I intend not the slightest bit of criticism of the job they're doing because they've taken on a nearly impossible task. But I think what I'm suggesting is it's the responsibility of this whole room to come back and say, do we have a process that we're following today that is going to actually let us bridge our gaps and reach agreement? Because I don't think anybody should harbor any illusions you're going to reach agreement on everything by the end of the day tomorrow. But if you could at least polish off a couple of these issues and build, kind of practice the techniques and kind of get everybody comfortable with this is what it takes to come to a final resolution as opposed to listening to the comments and then taking it offline for, you know, to put another draft in front of people. That would then perhaps help you tomorrow afternoon to lay out the process for Dublin when you'll have more people, more voices, more interests, which hopefully will lead to a fuller discussion, but will also lead to a more chaotic discussion just because you'll have more people. But I think that's important because these are the most central issues to this organization that have been faced in years, and having more people being part of the discussion is important. But if you don't feel that we've got a process that we're following, then it's on all of us, all of you, to sit back and say, okay, how do we actually re-engineer this and have discussions that actually lead to resolution and lead to conclusion and lead to progress? And, you know, if there's a way we can help, we're glad to, but at the end of the day, as I said in the blog, the whole point of this is the communities being asked to step up and play the stewardship role. So you shouldn't need the United States being the steward of this discussion either. And so they're growing pains. It's part of the process to, as everybody matures and understands what's involved in making this work in the future. But we'll continue to help and support any way we can. I constantly get asked, well, is any particular idea a non-starter? And I will repeat what I said in Argentina. At this point, we do not have a view that any particular approach is absolutely okay or is absolutely not okay. But what I can tell you is that the work that we need to see, the thoroughness, the detail, and I put this in the blog, is not there yet. So that I don't feel comfortable even taking what we saw in these reports and trying to opine on them, because there are too many open questions about, are some of these ideas potentially destabilizing? Have people thought through how this would actually be operationalized and put the protections in place to prevent that from happening if you go with any of these models? And as I said before, given the time we're dealing with, simpler is better. You have to meet the needs of the community. I'm not suggesting you shouldn't. You have to meet our criteria, but if you have different ways to approach it, the one that allows us to go forward with the least amount of churn, change, confusion, misunderstandings that will occur in the future, the better, because that's what we're trying to accomplish here. So I'm trying to turn it into a pep talk, but maybe it's not sounding that way. But in any event, I've never been associated with as large a group of people acting in good faith as we've got here. And I think we just need to think through a process that helps everybody rise to the occasion and deliver a final plan here in a time frame that lets us complete the transition by next September. So with that, I'm out of here. Good luck. And we'll see you in Ireland. Bye.
So before we continue with our discussion, with respect to the overarching plan or the approach for this day, let me just refresh your memory that we sort of had an idea. We had a proposal on how we would go about with this. You know, we've identified these areas where we think we have consensus, where we have disagreement, and those that need more work. And we're going to look at that list again after this discussion to check whether we can move bits from right to left to see whether we have consensus. We are taking stock of what we're discussing. So we're going to propose to you updated versions of the different topics for you to confirm later today and tomorrow so that we hopefully can move things from the right to the left-hand side. Likewise, we're trying to get confirmation on the requirements. That's the basis for our work, meeting the requirements. At the same time, trying to understand what the concerns are, board concerns, community concerns. And I think we're going to see in the next session or two that this approach will help us bridge the gaps. If we understand the concerns, whichever way they've been framed in comments or other papers, if we understand the underlying concerns, if we can address the concerns, remove the concerns, I think we're making big steps forward. That is not to say that we will leave the room in a big kumbaya thing, but we might still sing around the fireplace tonight and sing together. But this is to understand where the concerns lie in order to address the concerns, and that will save us the trouble of fighting over models, right? So that was the intention. I think we got derailed to a certain extent by people still standing firm by their positions and trying to make their points. But we're still trying to amalgamate the common areas out of that, and hopefully by the end of tomorrow we will all say that it wasn't a waste of time to come here and that more hands will be raised. Thanks, everyone. Back over to you, Leon.
Thank you very much, Thomas. So going back to the queue, I have Alan Greenberg.
Thank you very much. I'm going to spend the first few seconds of my time regarding Larry and what he said. One of the things in his blog that
he likes making cryptic comments. One of the things that was not cryptic was, we have to come to a single agreement, period. To do that, people are going to have to compromise and lower their standards on individual things in exchange for other things. I know we said it's not negotiating, but it is negotiating. I haven't seen a lot of that yet, and that's disappointing. I just note that. Back to the IRP. Becky, we added in this version the ability of the IRP to look at conflicting panel decisions, and the board has suggested maybe that should go to another panel, not the IRP, but if it does stay in the IRP, there really needs to be outcomes associated with that kind of IRP that we sort of forgot to put in this version. I don't think I heard you mention that, and I just wanted to reiterate it if it had somehow skipped by. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Becky?
As I've just stated in the chat, I agree. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hit push. I definitely agree with Alan that the details on how those decisions, you know, would be reached and what they would be, the parameters around that, definitely are something that need work.
Thank you very much, Becky. A follow-up by Alan.
Yeah, that's true. I was just looking at the fact that the outcomes that we have for the IRP are all, did they follow bylaws or not, whereas in this case, this is a completely different kind of outcome, and we just need to enumerate that and identify it as a valid outcome.
Right.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Becky. I'm closing the queue with Kieran McCarthy, and next in the queue I have Chris Despain.
Thank you, Leon. I just very briefly wanted to address, again, the point about the separation of the MEM from the IRP, just to raise one more point. Again, it could be dealt with under the same heading of an IRP, but I thought it was important to bring it to the conversation, which is one of the things that the board talked about was that we felt that general commercial arbitration judges may have a different skill set than evaluating the fiduciary responsibilities of a not-for-profit or a governance skill set. So what we thought was that you might want a different skill set for your governance arbitration in respect to the community powers than you would for a commercial one. And that could easily be done under the same heading of an IRP, but you might need to have a separate standing panel or alternatively a standing panel that has a split in the different experiences that you might need for different types of arbitration. So that's another reason why we looked at it.
Thanks, Chris. Thomas?
I'm just saying we could have exactly the same process with different standing panels. I think that's a great idea. You know, can we just confirm this? Any objections?
Objections to this? Okay, I see Eberhard Lisa. Could you repeat it?
I was just picking up on Chris's suggestion that we need different skill sets for arbitrators, for governance-related stuff or fiduciary duties rather than other areas or issues that are being brought in front of the IRP. And I was attempting to make a quick win on this and trying to seek the group's agreement that we use the same process, but that we establish two separate standing panels that would be called upon when this or that set of question is asked.
Okay. I see some reactions, but I would rather keep the order that we have in the queue, so I'll go to Kieran McCarthy, and from there we'll listen to Greg and Caboose, and that is where I'm closing the queue with Caboose.
Hello. So I wanted to use Larry Strickland's intervention. I wanted to say more or less the same thing, but I didn't think anyone would listen to me because I don't work for the NTIA. We're running this meeting very, very inefficiently. There's a lot of people here who have a lot of knowledge about ICANN from all the different groups, and 99% of the time they are sat listening to other people or staring at laptops because we've got this process of people giving presentations then people asking for the microphone, and then there being a queue, and then having a couple of minutes here, and then the next person responding for a call. It's very, very inefficient given the amount of time that we have. I'm pretty sure if you did something else, broke out into groups or identified specific items and got different people from different groups to sit around and thrash out the ideas and then come back, you'd really make a lot more out of the fact that all of the people in this room know quite a lot about how this all works, and you've got to thrash through the ideas and find out where the disagreements are and where agreements can be made. I think we should be discussing the fact that the model is the big argument. There's no point ignoring it. It is the big argument. To my mind, having seen what the lawyer said, I think it's inevitable that there needs to be some kind of member, but obviously the board are deeply concerned for various reasons, and then we have to find out why they are concerned and then come up with systems for making that work. But it's not going to work in this process with you sat there and it taking so long and most people staring at their laptops. You're going to run out of time. So I just wanted to make that point.
Thank you very much, Kieran. Next on the queue, I have Greg Shetton.
Thanks, Greg Shetton, for the record. Just quickly to respond to the question, I do agree that the same processes could be used. I'm not certain I would agree that the MEM and the IRP necessarily need different panels. I don't think that the IRP is a standard commercial arbitration either. And indeed, I think the issues considered by the MEM and the IRP rather sit along a spectrum rather than being in different pockets. So I think that the distinction between the MEM and the IRP may be rather technical as opposed to, so as substantial as that might be. I think that's probably an implementation level question about whether to mount two panels rather than one, or to split the panels, or to say that some of the panelists are panelists for both, but some are only panelists for one. But overall, I think the idea of trying to have as few processes as possible and use what we've got is a good idea. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Greg. I remember we had Caboose after Greg. I don't know if you wanted to say something, Caboose.
Yes, sorry, I lost connection to the internet. When I raise my hand, that means please put me in the queue. Doesn't mean
you want
to override everybody.
Yeah, you are next.
The issue of two different panels, is it meant that the MEM issue group outcome will be submitted to that standing panel, which is different from IRP, or we are discussing other things? If that is the case, I agree. That should be two different, because one is dealing to discuss the outcome of the MEM issue group, whether you call them a standing panel or whatever, but it is entirely different from the appeal process and from IRP. So I need some confirmation, and I raise a question about the standard of review, and I seek some answer to that. Why we have to refer back to the pre-2013 April, as is mentioned in the ICANN proposal. So just need a clarification. Doesn't mean that I object, but I need clarification. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Caboose. And I think that Becky might want to comment on this. Becky, would you like to comment on this?
No, I'm trying. I'm sorry, I didn't hear all of Caboose's comment. Hold on one second. The 2013 review. I think that the 2013 standard largely was a substantive standard of whether ICANN was, in fact, abiding by its bylaws or not, as opposed to the more procedural and did the ICANN board have good faith with respect to it. So my understanding is that that there are a lot of bells and whistles that would need to be answered about what it means to just revert to the 2013 standard. For example, I understood that the board agreed that the standard of review would be de novo, prior to 2013, certainly that was not the position that ICANN Legal had taken in independent reviews. That was the position that IRP panels had felt was the appropriate reading of the language, but that was under dispute. So we would need to understand that. We would also need to understand, I think, the board comments expressed general comfort with the concepts in the mission, commitments, and core values, noting, however, that, you know, the actual bylaws language was extremely important, a point on which I certainly agree. But to me, the, you know, what does it mean to return to the 2013 standard has, there is a question associated with, you know, what does that mean with respect to the text of the mission, commitments, and core values language which feeds into it, and which, as currently proposed, would be different than the language that was before the IRP in 2013, as it happens. And then, having said that, I don't think that the standard that we have proposed is fundamentally different than the 2013 standard. So I am viewing the board's comments with a very open mind. I mean, at some level, you could read those comments as a sort of, you know, if you believe that there it is going to take a long time to implement all of the details of the IRP, that what they're really talking about is an interim standard that adopts some of the pieces, including the substantive review piece of this. Now, I will defer to the board commenters on that particular piece. But to me, that is something that can be worked out and resolved pretty easily in a conversation.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Becky. I think we will continue the discussion offline. And we still have two more people in the queue, and after we listen to them, we will be going into our break. So, Sebastian Bachelet is next.
Thank you very much. Just to be short, within the IRP panel, we have said that diversity must apply, and diversity is also on capability on doing one or the other of the issue we are talking about. Then I am not sure that we need two panels. We just need to be sure that we have within the panel the right competency. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sebastian. Next on the queue, I have Eberhard Lisse.
Eberhard Lisse from .na. I think it's time for something completely different. So far, we have been sitting around here since 8 hours and have achieved exactly nothing. I propose, therefore, that we tomorrow change our approach totally, change the agenda, and focus on a single topic and get it done. If you finish this before 4 o'clock, maybe start another one and get and deal with this until conclusion on the telephone, on the mailing list, and on the telephone calls. This approach, as Mr. Strickling has said, and as Kieran has said, and as I believe I have been chatting with a few colleagues, is simply not working. I have some issues with the way the chair are conducting this. The opinions from the chairs are much too prominent instead of just focusing on moderating the meeting. But we have been through this in the past. It doesn't really matter, but we haven't achieved anything today. And I think we should use the time in the tea, in the coffee break, and maybe tonight to think about how we can do, what we can do to salvage this. I do not agree with the report, as you very well know, but I'm not trying to sabotage it. we need to find a way out of this and get it done so that we can put on a proposal that achieves broad, if not full, consensus, and that the chartering organizations and groups can sign off on. At the moment, this, I do not see this happening, not in Dublin, not at any time real soon.
Thank you very much, Abahad, and we'll definitely keep a thought to what you have said and many others have said. So now I would invite you to go into our break, and we'll come back to continue with agenda item on principles. So we'll break for 15 minutes. We'll reconvene in 15 minutes. Thank you.